Gary Hart served as a senator from Colorado from 1975 to 1987. After leaving Congress, he resumed his private law practice and, in 2001, earned a doctorate in political theory from Oxford University. He served as an advisor to American companies on large-scale international projects, taught courses at Yale Law School and the University of Colorado, and chaired a number of U.S. government commissions. Senator Hart has written several books on U.S. history and politics. Today, we'll speak with him about his newest title. Welcome, Senator. It's an honor to have you with us on the Book Report.
It's my pleasure, and thank you.
You describe yourself as a constitutional evangelist. How so?
I'm one of those kids that went to public school and took eighth grade civics and took it seriously. And I guess I've taken it seriously ever since and responded to the Kennedy challenge in the 60s to participate in government and participate in the public life of our country. And just can't get over it.
In the Republic of Conscience, you spotlight campaign finance, how congressmen sell their souls to special interests to get elected, then work to get reelected. How can we break out of this destructive cycle?
Well, I think it'd be helpful if former members of Congress, first of all, didn't walk out the door and become lobbyists themselves. That did not happen on any significant scale when I was in office in the 70s and 80s. Since that time, it's become quite acceptable, if not fashionable, for members of the House and Senate to stay in Washington and join lobbying firms or law firms that, in effect, lobby. I think I've heard reports there are over 400 former members of Congress who are now out lobbying in some way. And I just think that this did not happen when I was in the Senate in those days, and it's happened in the last 25 or 30 years. So I would hope we would restore a time when people voluntarily would practice law in the traditional sense and not convert a title given them by their constituents into income.
Do you think it's possible to reach a place where candidates are not elected based on the size of their TV budget?
Well, it happens. It does happen, and I had experience with that years ago. There are times when the candidate with the least money does win because that individual man or woman has a better story to tell and more ideas for solving our problems. But overwhelmingly, we get elected by being on the media, paid media, and that costs a lot of money. Most of the campaign dollars that are raised, tens of millions, hundreds of millions, and now in the presidential campaign, billions, much of that money goes to paid media, television and radio, and people respond to it.
You wrote in the book, "We have a sinister system combining staggering campaign costs, political contributions, political action committees, special interest payments for access, and most of all, the rise of the lobbying class. Is there hope for our political system?"
Oh, of course. And the history of our country, we've had political scandals before, Teapot Dome and real bribery in the past of individuals or small groups. I don't think we've ever had what I would call legal corruption, using the founders of our nation, their definition of corruption, which was placing special interests ahead of the common good. It's the legalization of that kind of corruption that's a danger to our country, and that's really a happening of the last two or three decades, I would say 25 or 30 years.
You write about the clash of court and country. Can you explain?
Well, our founders came here, obviously, from Europe and many of them from England, and in the late 17th and early 18th century, England began to divide between what was called the court and the country. And the country was composed of everyday farmers and shopkeepers and ordinary citizens. The court, obviously, was the power structure. That was the king of the day, the courtiers, the people surrounding the king, people of privilege and prerogative and power. And the countryside understood that they were shut out of government and no one paid attention to them. And what I warned against, and the founders warned against, was that kind of polarization occurring in this country, that everyday people across the country, Denver, Colorado, and elsewhere, believing that the government has become such a closed system, and if you're not in that power structure and intricate networks and Rolodexes, then you just have no voice at all or no power at all. That, as I said, is a very dangerous situation. We can get out of it, but it's going to require an alarmed citizenry that demands change.
We're speaking with Senator Gary Hart on the Book Report. Many believe that the Supreme Court put the U.S. government for sale to the highest bidder. What are your thoughts?
Well, as I say in the book, the Citizen United decision, as a lawyer, Citizen United decision dumbfounded me, as it did many, many others, including legal professionals. For a Supreme Court justice who is supposed to understand our Constitution and its history to conclude that a corporation, which is a legal fiction, has the same right of speech as an everyday American and can put unlimited amounts of money into promoting its own special interests, is to legalize this corruption that the founders warned us against. How they could reach that decision is staggering to me. It is so wrong, and it must be ultimately reversed, which means the court has to change, and it's going to be several years.
Right. What is your vision of a global commons, which you wrote about in the book?
I think it's happening with globalization, with the age of information, with the dramatic increase in trade, including American trade. We're selling advanced aircraft all around the world, civilian aircraft. We're selling Microsoft software. We're selling high technology, medical technologies. So trade is trade's a two-way street, and we have to compete in it. And we're also leading the world in information technologies, which are transforming governments and transforming political systems all over the place. What we have to resist is thinking that our power is only in our military. We have enormous economic power, and we have even more power in our political principles to the degree we live up to them. I've traveled the world enough to know that people around the world see the difference between who we say we are and how we actually behave. We go to war to bring supposedly to bring democracy to the Iraqis, and yet I can guarantee you there are an awful lot of people in Iraq who know that 50% of the American people don't take the trouble to vote.
How do you think history will judge the Obama presidency?
Too early to say. It will take a long time. He inherited, it's fashionable to say, he inherited a mess, which he did. And it took us six or seven years to begin to dig out of the economic collapse of 08, which he walked right into. And then he had to liquidate two wars. So he didn't come into an ordinary presidency or White House. He came in with two strikes against him. Since that time, there are mixed opinions about Obamacare, but it's here to stay. I think it's a major achievement in getting health care to millions of people who didn't have it at an affordable cost. And the picture internationally is mixed. He's struggling to get trade agreements in the Pacific, which are very important to American companies, and American workers, for that matter, who are exporting. And the list goes on. Our education system isn't nearly what it should be. We need to make real progress in that area. So it's a mixed picture, and it's going to take, as usual, 10, 15, 25 years.
What is your opinion about the crop of 2016 presidential hopefuls?
A lot of them on the Republican side. What's distressing are the number of them, those least well-known, not as known as Governor Bush, who are seeking the support of billionaires, and billionaires holding their own primaries to summon candidates to appear before them as if they were potentates, to recite their litany of whether they agree or disagree with the billionaires' list of desires, where the Koch brothers or casino operators or car salesmen or what, whoever has all that money. That's a very dangerous thing as well. There are not enough candidates on the Democratic side. I believe Governor O'Malley deserves to be heard. I think Senator Webb from Virginia, who has just entered, deserves to be heard. And there may be other candidates as well.
I couldn't agree more. Are you already at work on a new book?
Not while I'm trying to get people to pay attention to this book. But I do like to write, and I've written a lot, and I'll probably find a new project.
All right. Well, Senator, the Republic of Conscience was insightful and very accessible. Senator, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my great pleasure, and thank you for your time.
My pleasure, Senator. Thank you.
Bye.